Icelandic National Poem. This is my room. We call it Iceland. It's chained to Europe with a marine cable, and to and from here airplanes fly with their ink cartridges full of people. Here I dwell in a matchbox that I care for so dearly since I painted the inner walls last winter. Life goes on as usual. In the store, everyone meets and laughs and pats each other on the back. Most are hoping a robbery will happen soon and enjoy their faithful security service. The insides and the bones are expensive. The people at the hospital lent me a battery so that I could enjoy my success longer, and therefore I carry a battery on my back instead of wings like the others. That's fine. I sleep while they recharge. The protection of the future and the past weighs heavily on the shoulders of our authorities, who encourage us with convincing care. That's good. That's fine. They say that exercise and a healthy diet will keep the years from coming on. I show up at their doorstep with my alarm clock, and they set it for me. That's fine. I hang up my pajamas next to the wedding gown. The young people get plenty of time to decide whether they want to be a corpse or a bride when they grow up. Then you can also go the full distance, become both corpse and bride, and choose both the orange and the apple. A story was told of a woman who changed the light bulbs in her dream world, and now she feels much better. A story was told of a man who shot down all the light bulbs in his dream world, and now he feels much better. Bridegroom, corpse, orange, apple, dog, cat, Pepsi, Coke. But now it's high time to crawl out and get some coffee in a cup, a donut, a pretzel, or a bun, and say hi to the cutest son. Hi, cutest son. Now everyone feels much better. The Blue Tower. My cell here in the Blue Tower measures 2.5 of my strides wide, and I can cross its length in 4 strides. But what most distinguishes this piece of abode from the tribulations of the Church of Darkness, where I spent my first night in the tower, is that daylight pours in through the window, which is situated high up in one of the longer walls. The window alcove measures more than 2 cells long, or rather deep, since the walls are so thick in this mighty tower. It can be said that it rather depends on the season of the year whether the window represents a blessing or an ordeal. The blessing predominates, though. The daylight, together with less fetid air, outweighs the ordeals posed by the cold now that winter is approaching. There is neither glass nor a screen across the window, so it is always open. Not very long after I had arrived here, the guards reappeared and brought me a battered old bed along with a poor mattress and a blanket of sorts. I can stand the bed up on its edge and use it as a ladder to reach the window, where I feel happier than anywhere else. Sitting up there at length and often reading for my pleasure the only book I have to hand, Apuleius's Golden Ass, which I was carrying with me when I was manhandled by those rogues in Kaldidalur. I would even attempt to translate that tragicomic story into the Icelandic tongue if I had a pen, ink, and paper. It is no less a pleasure and diversion for me to have some view from my window. In fact, mainly of the roof below where some of the palace buildings adjoin the tower. Thick iron bars have been put across the window, but the gap between them is adequate for me to stick my head through easily. And since I am not heftily built, I have no trouble in slipping my body through either. Because the bars are not placed on the very edge, but are set some way into the wall with a steep, sloping surface beyond them, nothing but a fall to the death would greet a man who saw this as offering any means of escape from the prison. But by laying down on the inside of the window alcove and thrusting my head and trunk out between the bars, I can gain a better view beyond the wall and prevent myself from falling out by gripping those great iron bars with all my might. I can in fact see over a fair part of the palace grounds then, but it is disapproved of if I reveal myself in this way in broad daylight, and I have not attempted to do so after being sharply rebuked once and threatened with confinement in the Devil's Dyke if I were discovered hanging out of the window again when the king himself or his noble foreign guests happened to pass through the palace grounds. What is not objected to, however, since no one can see me by cover of night, is if I lie on my back and thrust myself out in the same way to examine the stars and the movements of the constellations, which has long been my entertainment in the evenings. If I thrust myself out like this and keep a tight grip on the thick bars, I can look up diagonally at the sky from beneath the outer edge of the window, though not more than a few seconds at a time, since the strength soon drains from my arms if I perform this act for too long at once. This view of the stars has been like nourishment for my spirit, giving me access to a paramount feat of creation, and likewise offering some kind of consolation to know of people back in Iceland who are perhaps looking at that same instant at these same stars. Then I think of all the people who have treated me best and wish that no evil will ever befall them. I think of my aged and honorable mother back home in Björk, and my loyal friend Einar Anfinsson, clergyman at Staðr in Hrutafjörður. I think of Björn from Skotsá, and my friend Hallgrimur Pettersson, clergyman of Kvalsnes, and his wife, Guðríður. Not least, I think of Frida and my boy, wherever they may be and whether they are alive or dead, either or both of them. Sometimes I think, too, of Sigríður from Staðarbakki, and in anguish I see before me all that might have been had fortune wanted to flatter me by disarming my opponents and thwarting all their efforts. Yet I still have to put my faith in the Lord. Whatever may be said about the many questions I raised in my discourse against the greater edict, it ought to be as clear as day to anyone who takes an unprejudiced approach that its main content and foundation are the express opinion put forward in the lawful reply of the Lord's apostles, in Act 5, to obey God rather than men. That wherever the laws of God and of man disagree, then the law of God shall prevail, and the law of man yield. This truth has admittedly been abused before and since by the papacy, which called its decretals and pronouncements the law of God, but which is a complete distortion. The Pope is no true God, and his traditions and pronouncements are therefore no laws of God, if God's commandments conflict with them. I have asked, who is wiser than God to know what is most right? Who has rightful vision such as God to see the most suitable order of things? Who has power to impose laws on creatures like the Creator himself? I certainly said, it is neither the Bishop of Rome, the Pope, nor any Icelandic prelate, and least of all 24 uneducated laymen, like the promulgators of the Great Edict, gathered together in Anno Domini 1564 beside the river Oxirau in South Iceland. How such people had the power to impose that edict upon the bedroom habits of us Icelanders, I have never been able to fathom. Item, I do not clearly understand or perceive how that edict can be in accordance with God's words or his laws. My aim in writing my discourse was simply to induce the good-hearted reader to speculate with me and consider whether God's law and the law of our land in any respect disagreed, so that the verse that God's law shall be above that of men would need to settle the difference between them. Or whether people who are subjected to such law have the possibility of appealing to God's law in order to protest against the law of man. And since man is said to be a rational animal, having the power of discourse and inquiry to deduce and prove one thing by another, I felt I could trust that this sensible head would find it neither base nor improper to contemplate the truth. For truth emerges most clearly when a question is attacked and defended. We test the strength of iron with an iron file. Glass breaks when bent, but gold is shaped. A headwind makes the storm stronger. In particular, I asked that the authorities should tolerate the truth when it was stated, the reader augment what was understated, and everyone contemplate what was questioned. That people should gladly and freely indulge themselves in a little mental gymnastics. Just like the late Jon from Ingveldsstadr, I believe that children always enjoy hearing how the cock sparrow sported with the eagle on the wing, sitting on its back and saying, "Here I am."